The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Who is Bryce Terang? Let's find out. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, April 4th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White today on the show. We're going to recap all of Monday's action, have some new segments for you, This or That, Who Are These Guys, and we'll wrap up with some of your Team Name Tuesday submissions. Before we get going, make sure to like this video and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. And if you are listening on the audio side, make sure to download, follow, and leave a 5-star rating. It really does help. We appreciate it. For those who are new to the podcast this season, I have a soundbite that I'd normally play at the beginning of the show the past few years. It sounds a little something like this.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And then we would start the show with our oh my goodness gracious player of the night. It could be good. It could be bad. It could be a situation, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit. And I'll still play it here or there, but I want to mix in other calls as well. So I need your help. Other calls from baseball history, recent calls, whatever it might be, send some fantasybaseball@cbsi.com or tweet them to me @roto_Frank, and we'll build up a rotation here. We'll still play Oh My Goodness Gracious, but I want to change it up a little bit. With all that being said, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm swell, Frank.
Well, that's
good. I'm doing just fine.
I am going to start us off with Oh My Goodness, if that's all right with you.
Perfectly honest.
What's up? You froze up a little bit.
Oh. You didn't want me to go into how I'm actually feeling?
No, how are you actually feeling, Scott?
If I'm being completely honest, I am feeling a little anxious about the way things are starting out here. I have a few concerns. Namely, a lot of really good pitchers are giving up a lot of hits. Not so much home runs, although today it seemed like there were a lot of home runs being hit. For example, George Kirby today, 9 hits and 4 1/3 innings. Nestor Cortez, who, you know, by the standards we've seen from other pitchers so far this season, had a really good debut, 7 hits and 5 innings. And BABIP is way up, certainly if you compare it to early last season, but even by the standards of the season-long BABIP last year, BABIP is way up. It's, I believe, coming into play today, BABIP was 301. That's compared to 276 over the first 5 days of play last year. Mm. That's a big increase. Now, it was 290 overall last year, but, you know, Still, that's a big increase too, 290 to 301. And I just don't know. I just don't know how that's going to play out. It seems like that might be, I mean, the stolen base increase has been
insane.
You know, almost three times as many stolen bases through those first five games as last year. And I did more or less anticipate that. But to see how much BABIP has increased, I don't know how the pitching pool is going to play out. And it has me feeling anxious. Usually I'm the one talking people off a ledge this time of year.
It's usually me, Scott. Let's be honest.
I might need some talking off a ledge because, yeah, some of my pitching staffs are getting wiped out.
We will talk about it. There is an interesting tweet from Jeff Passan early on Monday afternoon, which highlighted how much steals have been up, the league-wide batting average so far. So we'll talk about a few of those things. Home runs as well. I know there was a lot of home runs hit on Monday, and we're getting lots of questions like, what's going on? There's all this offense going on. Where are we going to find pitching? Well, it's a good question, and we'll get to that. I want to start with Bryce Terang. Obviously led the podcast with that, and he had a monster game here on Monday. He went 2-for-3 with a grand sock and a shoe. That's right. Grand slam and a stolen base. His first career home run is a grand slam, by the way. Already his second steal of the season. And Scott, Bryce Terang is someone, you know, we definitely mentioned throughout spring training as a, you know, deep sleeper, middle infielder for, you know, deeper roto league, something like that. Maybe he's kind of playing himself into, you know, standard size leagues, 12 team roto leagues here as well, or maybe even points leagues. I'll find out how much you like him. But Bryce Terang is 26% rostered, so he's widely available. Last year in the minors, he hit .286 with 13 home runs and 34 steals, and will soon pick up second base eligibility as well. He has shortstop to start on CBS, but yeah, second base will be coming hopefully within the next couple of days. What are your thoughts on Bryce Terang? Do you think he is a must add in fantasy baseball?
I wouldn't go that far. I do like him. There were kind of three tiers of rookie shortstops who bring some speed element. There were three different tiers that I was targeting in roto drafts this year. First tier was Ezekiel Tovar. The second tier was one of the Yankees shortstops before, of course, Anthony Volpe's stock skyrocketed. And the third tier was Bryce Terang. So I got Bryce Terang in most of my 15 teamers, and I'm feeling happy about that today, of course. When we analyzed him a little bit after he made the Brewers roster, I thought he had the potential for Thyro Estrada-like numbers. And so far with what he's done, I have no reason to back down from that comparison. But the reason I'm not going to say he's must roster is, I mean, he's already sat out one game. He sat out the only game the Brewers played. It seems like the plan here in the early going is to platoon him. If he plays well enough, I imagine that'll stop. But I did get a lot of people specifically asking, Terang versus Ezekiel Tovar, that first tier rookie speedy shortstop that I was targeting. And I'm not ready to make that swap. I mean, we haven't even seen Ezekiel Tovar play a game at Coors Field yet. So that seems premature. I don't think, despite the big grand slam today, I don't think we're going to see huge home run numbers for Terang. 12 to 15 seems within the realm of possibility, but that's probably on the higher end of what he's going to deliver. I would be very surprised if he was a 20 homer guy. And I think something like that is going to be much more attainable for Ezekiel Tovar. So yeah, Bryce Terang deserves more attention than he's gotten in fantasy to this point, but I'm not going to go as far as to call him must add.
Yeah. So I tweeted on Monday that I don't think he is a must add either. I think in any type of categories league, I think I can get behind it either as a bench bat, if you play in a shallower league, like a daily lineup league on Yahoo or something like that, or if you play in a roto league with a middle infielder, then yeah, I definitely would want Bryce Terang in a league that deep. And I was going to save this for later, Scott, this or that, basically comparing some interesting players right now, Bryce Terang or Nolan Gorman. I think it will come down to, you know, what are your team needs? If you need power, go with Nolan Gorman, but he picked up two more hits here on Monday, and he was the fourth most added player this weekend on CBS. He's up to 59% rostered. In a vacuum, who would you rather have, Nolan Gorman or Bryce Terang?
Terang. I'm going to stick with the idea that I see more playing time upside for Terang than Gorman because of the prevalence of bats that the Cardinals have. I know Lars Nootbaar just went on the IL, but nobody's expecting that to be a long-term stay. And Alec Burleson's been hitting well in Nootbaar's absence, so that's just going to create one more mouth to feed. I mean, Gorman's off to an impressive start. The plate discipline especially has been encouraging, so I may look foolish about that in the end, but just so many mouths to feed in that Cardinals lineup.
Yep. I would go with Bryce Terang as well, and I just looked up his splits in the minor leagues just to see how Terang performed against lefties. He was good. Actually, last year he was better against left-handed pitching than he was against right-handed pitching, so I think there's a chance that if he continues to play well against righties, maybe he just earns an everyday role against left-handed pitching as well. So I like both Terang and Gorman, but I would take Bryce Terang over Nolan Gorman. Scott, oh my goodness gracious, a player that you'd like to highlight from Monday.
Well, it's kind of a player, kind of more a situation. So the Braves released their starting lineup today, and I was amazed to see that Travis d'Arnaud was in it again, because that makes it 4-for-4, Travis d'Arnaud in the starting lineup for the Braves. And remember, he was somebody who was pushed down draft boards in a pretty significant way after the Braves traded for Sean Murphy, because the thinking was, okay, d'Arnaud's not going to play that much anymore. It's not going to be like a true backup catcher, maybe get some at-bats at DH, but not going to get enough at-bats to be anything more than like a low-end number two catcher. And I was a little resistant to that idea first, but eventually I succumbed. And just because everybody was drafting him so late, I didn't want to be the one reaching for him. But he keeps playing. And Sean Murphy's only started 2 of the 4 games. Travis d'Arnaud started all 4. And so not only that, but he's performed well. Even here on Monday's game, he only had 1 hit, but he hit 3 balls in excess of 102 miles per hour. And he was batting cleanup. So he's, you know, they're trusting him to bat in the heart of the Braves lineup, a very good lineup. And eventually he'll have to sit. I don't think he's literally an everyday player, but he's, based on the habits the Braves have shown so far, I think Travis d'Arnaud is absolutely worth using even in one catcher leagues. So that's A. B is, okay, well, what's the impact on Sean Murphy? Is he only going to play half the time? Because that would be a problem. He was obviously a much bigger investment than d'Arnaud on draft day. I don't think he's only going to play half the time, just because through 4 games, that's what's happened. I mean, he has the second highest pop time among catchers behind only JT Realmuto, and he had a impressive caught stealing when he played Sunday. Obviously, the Braves gave up a lot of assets for him. They signed him to a long-term deal immediately. They like him, and he brings that quality in a catcher that's been kind of overlooked in recent years as stolen bases have become less important in the game. Well, they're rising in importance again. So a catcher who throws is an important asset, and that is something Sean Murphy does very, very well. In the long run, he's going to end up making more starts behind the plate than Travis d'Arnaud, just because they've split him evenly so far doesn't mean that's how it's going to play out all season. And it wouldn't surprise me if occasionally Murphy himself started at DH. I think the takeaways here are Travis d'Arnaud is a hitter the Braves value higher than Marcell Ozuna, higher than Eddie Rosario, and that's a very good thing for his value. But Sean Murphy as a defender is still vastly superior, because he's vastly superior to most catchers, and that's something the Braves are going to value too. Now, in addition to Sean Murphy, he's a pretty good hitter himself. So don't drop Sean Murphy, even if it's for Travis d'Arnaud. Trust that the playing time is going to be there, because the investment they made in him wouldn't make sense otherwise. But also, Travis d'Arnaud is worth using.
Yeah, and Travis d'Arnaud is up to 76% rostered on CBS. The player he's just behind, Scott, is Cal Raleigh, 79%. We know that, I think at least, Cal Raleigh is going to play more regularly than Travis d'Arnaud. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but who would you rather have in a one-catcher league?
So Raleigh led the position in home runs last year, and that can't be overlooked, but I'd rather have d'Arnaud in most circumstances, I think.
I can't blame you. I think I'd still roll with Raleigh for now, but it is definitely getting closer. Sean Murphy, someone that I was all over in spring training, you know, draft season, and I'm not worried, obviously. I mean, sitting out two of the first four games, but I think, you know, once we really get rolling here, I think things will kind of even out, and we'll get a lot of Sean Murphy and hit in the middle of a great lineup with the Braves too. So maybe that's just, you know, my confidence because I drafted him speaking, but regardless, I still do have a lot of confidence in Sean Murphy. Travis d'Arnaud is on the rise as well, though. Scott, let's talk about a few other waiver wire decisions. I mentioned Bryce Terang versus Nolan Gorman. This is something I was going to save it for later, but these are probably, you know, the players we're talking about most. And I have a nice little sound drop here, Scott. A new segment, This or That. Oh, yeah. So let's get into Adam Duvall or James Outman. You could only add one of these outfield standouts. Who is it going to be? Adam Duvall reached base four times again here on Monday. He went 2-for-3 with two walks, a run, and an RBI. The most added player on CBS this weekend. He's up to 66% rostered. James Outman is the other name I wanted to bring up. He went 2-for-4 with a triple. Actually, that game is still going on, so I guess he could add to that total if he wants to. 2-for-4 with a triple, three RBI, and two runs scored. He was the third most added player on CBS this weekend. He's up to 59% rostered. Scott, who would you rather have, Duvall or Outman?
I'd rather have Duvall. He had another big game here on Monday, and I just think he's healthy. I'm not sure. Well, certainly at the end of last season, he wasn't healthy. Second of all, it's pretty apparent as low as the temperatures were in Boston this weekend, that it's not going to be a detriment to Duvall the way it was early last season with the dampened baseballs not carrying. And third, I think his swing's perfectly suited for Fenway Park. A lot of towering fly balls to his pull side, and we're already seeing it pay dividends. So he's up to 66% rostered. He went from that's up from 44% when I wrote the waiver wire column last night. So yeah, people are on top of that one, and I'm with them.
People are reading and they are paying attention, Scott. So Adam Duvall is one of the most added players. Actually, in fact, again, he is the most added. I think I'll do the cop out kind of thing here. And I think in a points league where you need more volume, I would go after Duvall. I like Outman. I've talked about him a lot, and he was awesome in the minors last year. Obviously, I think it's a better lineup in the Dodgers. I mean, the Red Sox are scoring a bunch of runs early on here, but I think in Roto and category leagues, I would go with Outman. In a points league, I would go with Adam Duvall. What about if you need power? Two gentlemen on the same team. Trevor Larnach, 2-for-5 with a home run, three RBI on Monday. Most importantly, it came off of a lefty. We haven't seen them play a game against a left-handed starting pitcher yet, so I didn't know if Larnach would be in the lineup. You know, frankly, the bench is a little shallow right now for the Twins, so I don't know that they could platoon him, and so I'm pretty encouraged that home run came off of a lefty. He's 14% rostered. Joey Gallo went 1-for-3 with a three-run homer. Exit velocity, 112.3 miles per hour. That's one day after hitting two home runs on Sunday for Joey Gallo. He's 25% rostered. Scott, who would you rather have, Larnach or Gallo?
This is a tougher one. I think I'm going to say, so I'm torn between, okay, like we've seen Larnach get chances in the past and he's had little spurts, but then he's turned back into a pumpkin, got sent to the minors. He wasn't even expected to be on the Twins roster originally. So I'm torn between that and Gallo, who of course has monster power. We've known that for a long time. But when things go bad for him, you really regret having him at all. And so I think I'm going to lean like it.
Do it, Scott. Do it. Say
it. I don't even know what I'm about to say.
I know what I'm going to say. You know what I'm going to say. It's not Joey Gallo. That's the answer for me. I get what you're wrestling with here because there's still that smidge of a chance that Joey Gallo regains his old form and, you know, playing in a smaller market and in Minnesota, you know, not as many eyes, not as much attention. I get that. There's still a chance that he bounces back and he's going to have dual eligibility, you know, first base and outfield. That's pretty interesting too. But Trevor Larnach, we still have this kind of like mystery bag and he was mystery box.
It's a bag for you, huh?
I guess so. A little grab bag. But With Larnach, he did have some prospect pedigree. He's betting cleanup for the Twins right now, so I think even more counting stats opportunities there too. I'm leaning Larnach, but I think both are very interesting.
These were his first two extra base hits, Larnach. So, but the plate discipline's been good, and that's something that when he was first coming up in the minors was supposed to be a strength. I'm intrigued. I guess I'll side with you, Larnach, but it's by the slimmest of margins.
All right, well, let's talk about baseball so far, right, Scott? We mentioned it a little bit earlier, the grand scheme, the way things are kind of playing out right now. I mentioned Jeff Passan had a tweet on Monday highlighting different aspects of the game through the first 4 days of the season. This is before Monday's games. Stolen bases are way up. We're talking 70 steals versus 29 at the same point last year. An 83% success rate on stolen bases versus 67% at this point last year. Again, that's going to come down. I don't think it's going to be an 83% success rate all year, but people are off and running, and they're doing it very often. Batting average is up from 230 through the first 4 days of the season to 245. So 230 last year, this point, 245 so far this year. OPS from 682 last year to 715. So regardless of how you want to look at it, BABIP, batting average, OBP, slugging percentage, each of those marks are up so far. The time of game is down 31 minutes to 2 hours and 38 minutes overall. Love that aspect of it. We're getting lots of questions, Scott, about home runs coming on Monday, and the ball seems like it's flying out. I think we need more data on that before we, you know, kind of come to any conclusions. But entering Monday, home run to fly ball ratio was also up through the first weekend of baseball, 11.7% this season, 11.1% last year. So it sounds like a small number, but it actually matters a lot for, you know, as many fly balls are being hit on a daily basis. So I don't know. What are your early takeaways here on the way that baseball is playing out so far? You mentioned the BABIP earlier, you know, pitching seems like it's just getting absolutely destroyed early on. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I was a little surprised to see, because I got the sense that home runs were up, and I was a little surprised to see how close it was through the first five games this year versus last year. Up a little, but not as much as I was expecting to see. So, you know, the bigger things for me are the stolen bases, obviously. And as I was mentioning before, the BABIP. Or batting averages you cited here. Okay, so the stolen bases, you think the 83% success rate is going to go down. I don't know that I agree with that, because you mentioned, okay, through five games last year was 67.4. Well, it must have got a lot better after that, because over the past few years, the major league stolen base success rate has been around 75%. So I think it was kind of strangely low early last year, and that makes for the disparity there with the success rate, 83% now versus 60. It makes it seem bigger than it actually is. Major leaguers were already very successful at stealing stolen bases, doing so at about a 75% rate. So 83, seeing how much the success rate improved in the minors, that kind of corresponds to the same increase in the minors. Now, it was a much lower starting point in the minors. Minor leaguers overall not as successful at stealing bases as major leaguers. But yeah, I thought it might be something between 80 and 85%, just seeing how much the success rate improved in the minors. You apply that to that 75% rate in the majors. Okay. Really easy to steal bases now. And if it does continue, then I think you're going to begin to see players who we haven't generally regarded as base stealers begin to get in on the action. Not to the same extent, but players who were not expecting to steal double-digit bases will. Because mostly, for all the stolen bases we've seen, most of it, it's mostly been limited to players we already regard as base stealers. It's been kind of on the upper ends more. But as the success rate, as teams see how many outs, how they're not wasting outs on the base paths by sending runners, they're going to start sending more of them. So like it could actually increase from here is what I'm saying. Like this may be just the start of an even bigger stolen base explosion as the year plays out. So that's where I stand with the stolen bases. As for the BABIPs going up, that's what I'm concerned about. Yeah, because I mean, I don't remember it being a topic of great discussion this spring. I don't know that anybody dug into the numbers that much because it was only spring. And of course, there was a time, it wasn't that long ago, where the extreme shifts that became so commonplace in recent years, where they weren't so utilized. And it was basically just two defenders on each side of the bag. And it's not like batting averages were crazy. But as I'm saying that now, this is coming to mind just now, the whole theory behind BABIP was that, okay, an average BABIP is 300. When BABIP analysis really entered the scene, that was the thinking. Okay, average BABIP 300. And what did I say the BABIP was after the first five games? It was 301. So maybe it's just been so long since we've seen a league without shifts that we forget how common hits are, how common hits were. And that doesn't mean every time out George Kirby's going to allow nine hits. But it does mean that we need to get used to the idea of higher whips beyond what we were expecting, and even for good pitchers. Like the whip threshold, the acceptable whip threshold may change quite a bit. And so I can't really offer proactive advice because I feel like it's just something I have to sit back and see play out. But that's how I'm feeling about things right now, is that we may have underestimated the impact of this.
Again, we're, 4 days into the season, so things could still change a little bit. But my early lean, just based on these numbers, is that I kind of wish maybe I had another ace around in my leagues where, maybe I drafted one ace, but maybe I kind of wish I had two. Going back to, the juice ball era a couple of years ago, Scott, where, you drafted pitching so early because you wanted to secure good pitching before you got into that mid-tier, I kind of feel like maybe we're going back to that, but just in a different way. Instead of home runs, it's BABIP and it's hits, and that mid-tier of starting pitching, maybe it's not going to be as good as it was last year, and as a result, you kind of wish you had more aces who are striking people out and not getting balls in play. So, my early feel for what's going on.
The good pitchers haven't been that good either.
Yeah, that's a problem, Scott. We need pitching, so I don't know where it's going to come from, but
theory, yes, strikeouts specifically would be more important to get from pitchers. And not all the pitchers we regarded as high end were big strikeout guys. I don't know. I'd be curious to see, for instance, Christian Javier. When I picked him to win the Cy Young in the AL this year, I talked about how he's the most likely pitcher in any given start to throw a no-hitter. He allowed eight hits in five innings in his first start. But I noticed his fly ball rate was way down. He allowed a lot more ground balls than usual. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's going to undercut his unhittable quality if he's not putting balls in the air. I don't know if that happened with Nestor Cortez, with him giving up seven hits, because he's kind of the same way, extreme fly ball pitcher, which keeps the hits down. So what I'm saying is there were just kind of some fluke performances in there that may be skewing the results for specific pitchers. Of course, because it's a sample of one for all of them. So it almost goes without saying.
Right.
But at the same time, that the ability to for your batted balls to be fly balls, and obviously the ability to miss bats so that the balls aren't being put in play to begin with, are going to be more important for pitchers moving forward if this very early trend continues.
So on Monday, Nestor Cortez had a 27.8% ground ball rate. So you can see ground ball rate during the start on Fangraphs, but you can't see fly ball rate. But just based on deduction, I'm going to assume that he had a lot of fly balls in that start, and I don't know, maybe just got a little bit unlucky there. Let's take our first break here, but when we return, we'll get into the news and notes on Fantasy Baseball Today.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Fantasy Baseball Today is a finalist in the baseball category for the Sports Podcast Awards, and we're going up against some big names. It's a voting system, which means that we need your help. You can scan the QR code in the top right corner if you're watching on video, or find the link in the podcast or YouTube description. You'll need to quickly create an account on their site. I know it's annoying, but it takes less than a minute. And then vote for FBT. Voting ends later this week, April 6th. So we really, really do need your help, and we do appreciate it. So go out and vote for us if you can. Some news and notes. Liam Hendricks revealed that he's starting his last round of chemotherapy on Monday, and he added that he'll, quote, see you guys on the South Side soon. And I keep hearing late May as a realistic possibility. Awesome news there for Liam Hendricks. I think there's still kind of some hurdles that we need to get through before we start actually talking about a return date or a timetable. But Liam Hendricks is now up to 55% rostered on CBS. If you have an IL spot available, I think you absolutely should pick him up. Speaking of the IL, unfortunately, Lars Nootbaar was placed on the injured list with a jammed thumb. Juan Yepez was recalled from AAA. Alec Burleson started in left field and was batting second on Monday. Fernando Tatis Jr. will begin his stint with AAA on Tuesday. He's eligible to return from his PED suspension on April 20th. Seiya Suzuki played 4 innings in a simulated game on Monday. He should be back within a few weeks with the Chicago Cubs. Raisel Iglesias has not yet resumed throwing. The original plan was for him to start throwing 7 days after being diagnosed on March 23rd. Well, here we are. It is April 4th, and Raisel Iglesias is not throwing yet. I'm not panicking or anything, but obviously it's not good news for him. Anthony Rendon has been suspended 4 games for his role in that altercation with an Oakland A's fan on opening day. Tyro Estrada was pulled Monday after fouling a ball off his leg. He had a monster game before that, went 2-for-4 with a sock and a shoe. That's his first home run of the season, his second steal. And just a little early takeaway there. He's making me look pretty dumb. So if he's healthy, we'll see if Tyro Estrada can keep it up. Jared Schuster was optioned back to AAA on Monday. He's 71% rostered. Scott, is this an easy drop for us?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, depends on the depth of your league, of course, but anything close to standard size, I'm sure you could do better than, you know, maybe he'll be up later this month, maybe not.
Apparently, Bryce Elder is the most likely candidate to get the call when Max Fried is placed on the IL. He is 4% rostered for those who play in much deeper leagues, NL only, maybe 15-teamers, stuff like that. Patrick Wisdom was hit on the left wrist with a pitch on Monday, but x-rays came back clean. Ranger Suarez will throw another bullpen session Wednesday. He's working his way back from forearm inflammation. Matt Strom is filling in the meantime. Max Kepler left Monday's game with right knee soreness. Johnny Cueto left his start with that recurring biceps injury he suffered during spring training, and he is likely to land on the IL apparently, which means I think we'll see Braxton Garrett. Scott, I know that Yuri Perez started at AAA. I think it's probably too soon. You know, maybe if this happened in like May or June, we'd see Yuri Perez, but my guess is it would be Braxton Garrett.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't know that that's something to get excited about. Braxton Garrett had interesting stretches last year.
Yeah.
But looked terrible this spring. I know he had a long relief appearance already during the regular season where he was getting hit pretty hard. So wouldn't want to make any real investment in him.
All right, Kyle Bradish left Monday's start after taking a comebacker off his right foot. Preliminary x-rays were negative, but he'll undergo further testing. Johnny Brito could return to pitch for the Yankees on April 12th. That's the next date they'll need a fifth starter. And then I had a note about Sean Murphy, but we already addressed all of that. Pitchers that didn't have it on Monday. There's quite a long list here, Scott, so let's run through them. Jose Berríos. Not even the Royals could make Jose Berríos look good. He went 5 2/3, 9 hits, 8 earned runs, did have 7 strikeouts, 11 hard hits allowed, 94.1 mile per hour average exit velocity against. And this was much of the same problem last year, Scott, where he just got crushed. He gave up a lot of hard contact and did not look good in the WBC, did not look good in spring training. He's 92% rostered. I think there's no way that you could start Berríos right now, even in a 15-team league. And I don't know. We see another one or two like this, and you're probably dropping him, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of in the same boat as Jack Flaherty. Jack Flaherty's first start was more bunch of walks, 7 walks. But I don't feel comfortable starting him either. It's more just, okay, I know it hasn't been... It hasn't been that long since you were considered a high-end pitcher in fantasy, and a lot of the underlying data doesn't look that bad. So can you regain that form? And early signs for both of them are not good. I will point out that Jose Berríos' opponent in this one, Brady Singer, had good results, only 2 hits allowed in 5 innings, 1 earned run. His average exit velocity was exactly the same, 94.1. So I don't know. I'm not saying there was anything weird going on with StatCast and it was measuring the number wrong. I'm just saying we tend to focus on the average exit velocity if it's in line with the outcome. Like Brady Singer gave up some really hard contact too in that same game.
And I think I saw that Berríos's BABIP was 500 in this start, so obviously that's really bad. But as we were talking about earlier, you know, for someone who gives up a lot of hard contact and doesn't get a ton of strikeouts, this is probably not the best, you know, time period that we're entering for Jose Berríos. So we'll see what he could do. Hopefully he gets better in his next start. Carlos Carrasco was knocked around by the Brewers. He went 4 innings, gave up 5 runs, 4 hits, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. Still had 12 swinging strikes, but his fastball and curveball velocity were each down 2 miles per hour in this start. Carrasco blamed it on fatigue that he felt due to the pitch clock. Well, the pitch clock isn't going anywhere, so that doesn't make me feel too good about Carlos Carrasco. 81% yep. Rostered. Scott, are you more open to dropping him early on?
Yeah, I was never that high on him to begin with. I'm a little surprised he's that rostered. CBS leagues tend to roster pitchers more than they're rostered on other sites because there's more points leagues on CBS. But even so, I wouldn't want Carrasco in a points league.
Would you drop him for someone like Graham Ashcraft, who we spoke about yesterday?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, fair enough. What about Michael Kopech? He was bombed in his first start against the San Francisco Giants. He gave up 7 runs over 4 2/3, 5 homers allowed. He had 12 swinging strikes on 91 pitches. 0 of them came on the slider. And this is a lot of what we saw last year, Scott, where, you know, when Kopech was a reliever 2 years ago, that slider was really good. Last year, just didn't get any whiffs on his slider. That was the same kind of issue here today. And on top of that, gave up a bunch of home runs. 63% rostered is Kopech. Are you okay dropping him?
Again, I wasn't that high on him to begin with. I do think he was on the initial sleeper pitchers, the very bottom. Like, I think I even put in there, we're really scraping the bottom of the sleeper barrel with this one. But I eventually ended up replacing him with a 1-start guy for the final run on Sunday night. So,
Well, good call there. George Kirby, you mentioned him earlier, Scott. Not great in his first start against the Angels. 4 1/3, 9 hits, 4 runs allowed. Did have 14 swinging strikes, and I was looking into the pitch mix here. Didn't really change much. He got rid of the cutter that he was using last year, but it was a lot of the same. You know, whiffs on his fastball, not much on his secondary pitches. Gave up a lot of hard contact as well. 94.1 mile per hour average exit velocity against George Kirby in this start. And look, he has great control. He might just live in the zone too much. We saw this early on in Shane Bieber's career as well. Obviously, we're not dropping George Kirby, but how concerned are you here about this first start?
Yeah, this is what I was saying earlier about how I don't remember going through spring box scores, the surplus of hits being an issue there, when obviously the shift was banned then too. And I think Kirby is kind of a microcosm of that. He looked pretty unhittable this spring, and then regular season starts, suddenly he's given up two hits an inning. I mean, I don't want to be overly broad in the analysis. Yes, it was always so that George Kirby's arsenal may not be deep enough for him to live in the zone as much as he does. One start into 2023, I don't want to conclude that that's what's going on here. Obviously, a lot of more proven pitchers have had similarly bad starts already. And so I think my analysis is like it should be for most players this time of year. All right, let's see what happens next. Because I'm not willing to change my opinion of George Kirby based on this start.
Yep, I agree totally. On the other side of that game, Reed Detmers was not great for the Angels. He went 4 2/3. He gave up 3 runs. 2 of those were earned, 3 walks. So he was a little bit wild in this start. Did have 7 strikeouts. Maintained that big velocity jump that we saw during spring training. The fastball was up 2 miles per hour. The slider up nearly 4 miles per hour compared to last year. But Scott, very clearly here, wild with the walks and a lot of hard contact against Reed Detmers as well. I assume it's a lot of similar analysis to George Kirby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to change my opinion based on this one start, but I do think it is worth floating the theory that maybe the added velocity for Detmers, as effective as he was without it, coming back from the minors last year, maybe the added velocity is to his detriment. And we saw signs of that in spring training as well. So, again, let's see what happens next.
Especially with the control. I mean, that would make sense, right? If you're just trying to ramp it up, you just don't know where the ball is going. So I think that makes some sense for Reed Detmers. We'll see where the velocity goes from here. Hunter Brown, you think, all right, he's getting this awesome start against the Detroit Tigers. We know he's battling the back injury. Well, he was not very good in this start. 4 2/3, 4 runs allowed, 6 hits, 3 walks, only 8 swinging strikes on 93 pitches. 85% rostered, Scott, is Hunter Brown. Obviously, he doesn't have the track record of these other pitchers that we're talking about. I don't think that I'm going out and dropping him, mostly because he has SPARP eligibility on CBS, and he pitches for a really good team, so I want to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too. I wonder if the hype was a little much, and I don't think we were among those hyping him that hard, but he did seem like kind of a darling pick once he got that rotation spot for the Astros, and of course was pretty high-profile prospect. But the way he was being talked up, it was like he was, you know, Yuri Perez or something. Yeah. So, like, even last year, the little bit we saw, so obviously control was a huge issue for him in the minors. He came up late last year, was throwing strikes at a higher rate. Don't know why that started, but whatever. It's nice to see him overcome the control issue. Even so, 10% swing and strike rate was not very impressive. And in this start, Hunter Brown had
eight swinging strikes on 93 pitches.
Yeah, that's even worse than a 10% rate against the Tigers, no less. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to abandon him now if I've already made the investment. But I have more concerns about him than some of the other pitchers who've struggled the first time through.
All right. What about Charlie Morton? He was blah in his first start. 5 1/3, 9 hits, 3 runs allowed. More walks than strikeouts. That's 2 walks to 1 strikeout, only 6 swinging strikes. And we know typically, Scott, he's been a slow starter the past couple of years with the Atlanta Braves. But, you know, the one thing we could usually depend on Morton for is swinging strikes and strikeouts. And that wasn't the case here. Any thoughts?
So there's not a way to look up how many ground balls he got, what his ground ball rate was in this start, because I think that's going to be the biggest key to Charlie Morton's success. His problem last year was that for really the first time ever, he wasn't a ground ball pitcher. gave up a career high in home runs by far.
I have it for you, Scott. 50% ground ball rate in the start.
So let's see. Last year it was below 40%. Okay, so 50% is really good. 50% is...
But is it though? Like, this is, we get back into the conversation. Do you want your right-handed pitcher to be ground ball heavy with these shift restrictions and, you know, batting average and BABIP being up? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to yield a higher whip. It's still probably Charlie Morton's best formula for success. It used to be, you know, 10 years ago, that ground ball pitchers were generally good at run prevention, but were going to drag you down and whip. And that may be true going forward, and unless it's a ground ball pitcher who also happens to get a lot of strikeouts. He may still be a quality fantasy option, but he's going to be a detriment to whip specifically because of the singles he gives up. And so that may be what we're hurtling toward here. Charlie Morton did get singled to death in this one. None of the nine hits was an extra base hit. So I don't know. I mean, I think, like, obviously he's going to need better starts than this exactly to be somebody you want in your fantasy lineup regularly. But there are some encouraging signs here. I'm not ready to abandon my faith in Charlie Morton based on this start.
All right. Well, believe it or not, there actually were some good pitchers on Monday night. Let's take our final break and we'll talk about those right after this.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Make sure to sign up for our Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter. It's completely free and features notes from our nightly rundown and the latest articles from both Scott and Chris. Just go to cbssports.com/newsletters, check the box for Fantasy Baseball Today and any other newsletters that you might be interested in, and then press save settings. And that's it. You're all signed up. Let's talk about some pitchers that actually performed well. Freddie Peralta was great in his season debut against the Mets. He went 6 shutout with 7 strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on 85 pitches. The fastball velocity was up 1 mile per hour. The slider velocity was also up 1 mile per hour. And Scott, the pitch mix was much closer to Peralta's breakout 2021 than it was to last year in this first start. So... I was completely off during spring training, the shoulder injury last year. The Brewers kind of babied him. But I can also acknowledge that if he comes anywhere close to what he did in 2021, I will be completely wrong about him.
Yeah, I mean, this was a start that made me wish I had some investment in him, too. I have zero.
Same.
I actually had him on my bust 2.0. He also went 6 innings, which was something he only did 4 times last year. 6 innings on just 85 pitches. And that was my main objection to him, is that it seems like the Brewers are just going to baby him and really undermine his utility in fantasy. But one start in, that doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah. Someone who was kind of babied by his team in his start on Monday was Drew Rasmussen, who looked amazing. He was at the Washington Nationals, so obviously it's a great matchup for him. He went 6 shutout, 2 hits allowed, 0 walks, 7 strikeouts, 10 swinging strikes on just 66 pitches. That's a 15% swinging strike rate. But, you know, much like Jeffrey Springs, we spoke about yesterday, you know, the Rays, they have a pretty quick trigger with these guys. And it's not like Rasmussen was in trouble. They just pulled him after 66 pitches. He did change up the pitch mix a little bit so far in this one, through 5 different pitches at least 12% of the time. But Scott, he looked really, really good in this first start.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to know what to make of it. His cutter he used most often. It was one of his two most used pitches last year. He used it more than anything else in this start. It was down 2 miles per hour. Clearly, it didn't hurt its effectiveness. 10 whiffs on 66 pitches. I mean, that's a great rate if Drew Rasmussen can sustain that. He's looking at good times ahead. And then you have, as you pointed out, Frank, the fact he was removed only after only 66 pitches. And are the Rays going to continue to baby him? Really more of an organizational philosophy there than something specific to Rasmussen. I have the same issue with Jeffrey Springs, as impressive as he looked his first time out. I don't think Rasmussen has Springs upside. And will he be able to miss bats at this rate against teams other than the Nationals with consistency? I tend to doubt it, and we're saying that's going to be a problem for a lot of guys, potentially. So I might look to shop Rasmussen after this start. I mean, obviously, I'd want a really good return. It's something I'd look into.
The other two names on this list, John Gray, kind of a mixed start, but I put it in the good category. 6 1/3, 2 runs allowed, 7 strikeouts. They were 2 solo home runs. The problem is that his velocity was down a little bit in this one. Fastball down 1 mile per hour, slider down 2.4 miles per hour compared to last year. That is John Gray. The other one was Tyler Mahle, 5 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts at the Marlins. He is 73% rostered, so could be out there in some shallower leagues. Scott, any thoughts on John Gray and Tyler Mahle?
Tyler Malley's pitch selection returned to 2021 levels as well. And remember, Tyler Mahle was a really good pitcher. And
he had over 200 strikeouts that year.
Yeah, he did. And the whip was a little high, but overall, definitely a fantasy asset. So specifically, hang on, I looked up the wrong name. Specifically, Tyler Mahle, I think he got back to using his, here we go, more sliders and fewer splitters. And it was much closer to his 2021 pitch selection. The results were obviously good. A whiffs and 83 pitches. Okay, that could have been better. But I know Chris was high on Mahle as a bounce back candidate this year, and early signs are encouraging. I wouldn't add him over Justin Steele or over Graham Ashcraft, but he probably deserves to be more rostered than he is after this start. And I'll say the same for John Gray, who has long tantalized us with his potential. And maybe this year is finally the one.
Maybe. I wrote him up as a sleeper back in January, so I do have quite a few shares, and he looked pretty good on Monday. That is John Gray. Let's quickly run through some deep league names here, Scott. Where should these players be rostered, if anywhere? Brian Anderson went 2 for 3 with a home run on Monday. Through 4 games, he has 5 hits and should play every day for the Brewers. He's 10% rostered. Where should he be rostered in terms of league size and format?
Pretty deep leagues. Pretty deep.
Okay, so like a 15-team mixed roto, something like that?
I don't even know that I'd want him there. I mean, he can be, because anybody who's getting at bats can be there, but I don't think there's a ton of upside here.
All right. The Giants hit 7 home runs total against Michael Kopech and the White Sox. Conforto, Tyro Estrada, Mike Yastrzemski, and Bryce Johnson each hit their first, and Jock Peterson hit his second. David Villar hit his first and second, a double dong for him. Last year, he had 36 homers between the minors and the majors. 5% rostered, Scott. Should that number be higher? Where would you look to add someone like David Villar?
I mean, I'd prefer him to Brian Anderson, but to compare it to some of the other third basemen we've talked about in recent days, I'd rather have Yoan Moncada. I'd rather have Elijah Montero. I'd rather have Spencer Steer. But the Giants seem to like David Villar. They seemed committed to playing him close to every day, which is not something they say about many players. And if this starts a home run binge for him, then he may quickly, we may see that roster rate skyrocket.
Anthony DeSclafani looked great in his return to the mound. He was at the White Sox. He went 6 shutout with 4 strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on 73 pitches, and he's only 11% rostered, Scott. What size leagues would you be looking to add DeSclafani?
I think you could justify adding him in most leagues. Now, obviously, it's a lower priority than Steele or Ashcraft or even Tyler Mahle, John Gray. But it's worth reminding everybody that You know, obviously last year was a wreck for Desclafani because of the ankle injury, eventually shut down at surgery. In 2021, he went 13-7 with 3.17 ERA, a 109 whip, less than a strikeout per inning, but he could be another, he could be like an honorary member of the Mount Rushmore if he bounces back. And it is interesting that they've decided to award him with a start over Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea followed him in this game, actually.
Right.
So the Giants seem to have a lot of confidence in Desclafani too. I don't know. Maybe it goes completely belly up here and last year is closer to the true Desclafani. But given the injury situation and the Giants' confidence in him, you know, I thought about adding Desclafani in some deeper leagues and it just never ended up happening. I wish I had now. Mm-hmm.
What about two outfielders? Josh Lowe has multiple hits in the two games that he started, both against right-handed pitching. He's 9% rostered. Matt Vierling went 4-for-5 with a two-run homer in extra innings. He also attempted a steal, but was one of the rare players to get thrown out on the base paths. He has started 3 of 4 games so far. You know, deep leagues got Vierling and Josh Lowe. You know, is 12-team five outfielders, 15-team five outfielders? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, neither has really been on my radar yet. I'd certainly prefer like a Trevor Larnach to both of them.
Okay.
But there is some upside there, and they could make themselves relevant if they continue to play with enough, if they continue to start regularly enough. Mm-hmm.
I think I prefer Vierling. I just think he's probably going to play more, but Josh Lowe does have much more prospect pedigree. So two names to watch in five outfielder leagues. Tyler Wells came on in long relief of Kyle Bradish, who got hurt in that start, and he looked very good. 5 perfect innings with 2 strikeouts in this one. His cutter velocity was up 1.5 miles per hour. 4% rostered, Scott, but we've seen Tyler Wells have relevance in deeper leagues. What do you think?
Man, you're going really deep here.
Hey, pitch well. I mean,
yeah, but no, he's not going to. I mean, if we're worried about George Kirby, I can't. I understand we're talking about different league depths here, but you have to be especially discerning at pitcher, even in deep leagues, unless it's a points league, I guess, and you just need volume. But I don't know. If you get in a deep enough league where you're considering Tyler Wells, I think you're probably better off just starting relievers.
All right. Well, who are these guys, Scott? Jason Vossler came in on Monday and had hit a 3-run home run off of lefty Drew Smyly. Maybe he's this year's Brandon Drury after all. He does have 3 seasons with 20-plus home runs in the minors, though his overall career numbers have not been great. He is 1% rostered, so we're talking about the deepest leagues here. Luke Raley, another name, double dong for the Tampa Bay Rays. He has started 2 of 4 games so far, both against right-handed pitching, so it looks like he's on the strong side of the platoon there, and had a great spring training, .326 batting average with 5 home runs. We're talking deepest leagues here, Scott, but who are they? Jason Vossler, Luke Raley.
Yeah, well, they're both too old to really call prospects, and they're getting a chance now. I think Joey Meneses, you're hoping one of them becomes something like that. It's unlikely, obviously. Both of them, both Jason Vossler and Luke Raley, had strikeout issues in the minors that probably prevented them from getting a chance before now. I'd bet against it, but you know, if you're talking about an NL-only league for Vossler, an AL-only league for Raley, then of course they're worth taking a look at in formats that deep. I don't think it's likely they turn into significant fantasy assets just given their trajectory to this point.
Yeah, I picked up Vossler in my NL-only labor league because I lost Rhys Hoskins. I was starting Nelson Cruz, pretty desperate for offense, so love to see the home run here on Monday. And yeah, look, if you play in an NL-only league, anyone who has a pulse is going to be relevant in that format. Some hitting leftovers worth mentioning. Gleyber Torres with another sock and a shoe. Second time he's done that so far this season. He had 2 hits, 2 walks, his 2nd home run of the season, his 3rd steal. Just a little reminder that it's a contract year for Gleyber Torres. So, I don't know, we might see the best year yet overall from him.
And he might be, and I was saying the stolen bases, the surplus of stolen bases has mostly been among players that we already consider base stealers. I guess Gleyber Torres is kind of an exception to that rule. He did have 10 last year, and he had 14 the year before, but I don't think anybody drafted him counting on stolen bases necessarily. He seems to be taking advantage of the new rules.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe he's a 2020 candidate this season. That is Gleyber Torres. Brian Reynolds went 3-for-5 with a double dong. Masataka Yoshida went 1-for-4 with his first home run in the majors. Easy power to the opposite field over the green monster. He looks good so far, man. I'm pretty encouraged by what I've seen from Yoshida. MJ Melendez.
The quality of contact has been consistently high.
Yep. It's good news for him.
And I think only one strikeout, so a lot of contact too.
Oh, yes. That's what we heard about him is, very Luis Arraez-like in that way. MJ Melendez got on the board with a massive home run, 443 feet, 113.2 exit velocity. Ronald Acuna looks A-okay. Just fine to start the season. He went 3-for-4 with his second home run of the year. Gunnar Henderson also gets on the board 2-for-4 with his first home run of the season. And back-to-back days with a home run from Shohei Ohtani, this time off of George Kirby. The call to the bullpen, a few updates here for the Orioles. Felix Bautista, he's getting used early and often this year. Struck out 2 for his second save. For the Pirates, David Bednar allowed 1 hit, but also struck out 2 for his second save. For the Astros, it was not a save opportunity, but Ryan Pressly was back out there. He threw a clean inning, only threw one fastball, and it was down 2 miles per hour. Well, I'm still on watch here when it comes to Ryan Pressly. I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem kind of like something's going on there.
Little weird. For the Tigers, Alex Lang got the first opportunity for a save for the Tigers, and in a one-run game, he faced the top of the Astros lineup. There was kind of like some weird defense. You know, Torkelson had a double play ball and he threw it off of Alex Bregman's back. And then Austin Meadows is just a terrible left fielder. So it was a blown save. That's what you need to know. Alex Lang gave up a run. I don't know that it was entirely his fault. His stuff actually looked filthy in that game. Garrett Hill eventually picked up the save in extras for the Tigers. For the Angels, Jimmy Herget was used in the seventh inning with a one-run lead. Then Jose Quijada in the eighth. They tacked on a couple more runs. Carlos Estevez pitched in the ninth, but it was not a save opportunity. For the Diamondbacks, I mean, Scotty, not you, Scotty, the other Scotty.
Not me.
McGuff, yeah. Scott McGuff comes in for the save. One run game, ninth inning. I'm pumped. I've got him everywhere. Promptly gives up a pinch hit game tying home run to David Dahl. David Dahl, of all people. The very next batter, Ha-Sung Kim, walk off homer. Not good. Not good, Scott.
Not great, Bob. No. Scott McGuff needed to gain a foothold here as the closer, and he did just the opposite. He like, it just crumbled the dirt underneath the foot, and now I don't know what happens. Like, the Diamondbacks don't have a lot of good late-inning options. I don't know if... So, of course, Andrew Chafin got their first save of the year. He's a lefty, and so I don't think they'd want him to be the primary guy. Maybe Miguel Castro gets a chance. He did pitch earlier in the game, right?
Yes.
And you know, he could maybe get a chance. He's a name to know if you're speculating in deep leagues on saves. Miguel Castro may be next up. I don't know. Maybe they'll give McGuff another chance, but this was obviously particularly ugly.
Yeah. I think it's Andrew Chafin for now. I think I can't say that for certain, but my guess is that the next save opportunity will go to Andrew Chafin. He's looked pretty good so far this season. This Guardians and A's game was wild back and forth. It was Emmanuel Clase came in for the save in the ninth inning. He gave up 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks in that one. He took the blown save, wound up with the win because on the other side, I believe it was Trevor May, who came in extra innings with the ghost runner on base. He gave up 2 hits, 2 runs. One of those was earned, so he takes the loss. And then eventually the save goes to Eli Morgan of the Guardians. And then the last note for the Reds, Alexis Diaz was unavailable. He pitched 2 days in a row. Derek Law converted the save in a one-run game. To stream or not to stream for Tuesday, Domingo Herman versus the Phillies.
No.
Hayden Wesneski at the Reds.
Yes.
Kenta Maeda at the Marlins.
Interesting, but no.
Nick Pivetta versus the Pirates.
No.
Rowanzi Contreras at the Red Sox.
No.
Yusei Kikuchi at the Royals.
It's tempting if you're looking to pile up some strikeouts, but that could go very poorly too. So I'm kind of halfway.
Dylan Dodd at the Cardinals.
Rather not do that in Major League debut.
Steven Matz versus the Braves.
No.
Andrew Heaney versus the Orioles.
I'm tempted by that one. Okay. That's my second favorite to Hayden Wesneski, I think.
Jose Suarez at the Mariners.
Nah.
Let's slide over to Wednesday. Mitch Keller at the Red Sox.
Don't think so.
Corey Kluber versus the Pirates.
No.
David Peterson at the Brewers.
No.
I'll say yes.
Maybe. but I mean, it's better. I'm looking ahead here, and I'm not seeing any better options than that.
No, there are
not. If I have to say yes to somebody on Wednesday, I guess it's David Peterson at Milwaukee.
Wednesday is a rough day for streamers. Kyle Gibson at the Rangers.
No.
Eduardo Rodriguez at the Astros.
No.
Hunter Gaddis at the A's.
No.
Kyle Muller versus the Guardians.
No.
Chris Flexen versus the Angels.
No.
Zach Greinke versus the Blue Jays.
No.
All right, let's wrap up with Team Name Tuesday. If you want to send in a submission, some kind of creative team name, send it to fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. These are from Ryan in Houston. Actually got them back in February, and I thought they were pretty good. Lindor Truffles.
Okay.
Minter is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Karma Caprillion.
Okay.
This one's from Andrew. Esoc and a shoe. That's good.
You have to know how Esoc Paredes pronounces his first name. And maybe I'm not giving your league mates enough credit, but they probably won't.
Isaac in a shoe? What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
These are from Terry. Vinny P's Marinaccio band. I don't know what he's going for there, but that's interesting. The Ides of March.
Marinaccio sounds like some kind of like pizza nachos, right?
Oh, Scott, it's too late to get me hungry here, so let's stop. The Ides of March.
Of March, okay, yeah.
This one's from Bill. Ain't nothing gonna break a my strider. Ain't nothing gonna break a my stride. Nothing gonna hold me down. From Patrick, T. Cattell Party. Well, just party. T. Cattell Party. I guess it's like Tea Kettle Party.
Okay. Yeah, that one doesn't work for
Scott's
me.
Scott's out. From Felix, Logan O'Hoppy, Pale Ale.
Okay.
From Jake, Waka Flocka Flame.
All right.
Oh, man. Bringing me back to my my middle school days there, Waka Flocka. From Scott, Fat Bottom Guriels. That's pretty good.
That's a stretch, but okay. Keep going.
Rowdy Gunners.
Okay.
Two Shots of Jameson. Apparently has Dre and Jameson Taillon on his team.
Fair enough.
Jake's on a plane. I have Cronenworth and Fraley.
I guess. Okay.
Busy Mantiplying. Got kid number three due soon.
Okay. It's weird, but okay.
Last one is Friedel Birdie.
All right.
Oh, so what is that? Freebird? I guess that's what these
are. I guess.
Yeah, I didn't figure it out at first. This one's for Patrick. You say goodbye, I say bayo.
That's not a bet for cramming two names into one team name, two player names into one team name. That's not bad. I usually don't like when you do that, but that's not bad.
This last one's from Pete. It takes two to tango.
Yeah. Not bad.
I like that one. All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount+.